Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. In less than a week, we will elect a new president, but we'll also elect members of the House of Representatives. Today, we bring you the final installment of our 2016 Congressional Candidate Conversation Series, and we wrap it up in the first congressional district that stretches from Hampton Roads all the way up to Fredericksburg. Let's talk about it after this news from NPR. Wednesday afternoon, we are within the week of election. Can you believe it? Can you even believe it? We will be voting for a new president on Tuesday. We will also be voting for members of the House of Representatives. And depending on where you live, you may be voting for a new mayor. You may be voting on a light rail question if you live in Virginia Beach. There are lots of issues and lots of candidates on the ballots, and we've done our best to try to bring you conversations with very, very many of those. Tomorrow on the broadcast, you're going to hear from the mayoral candidates. That's happening in Suffolk, in Portsmouth, and in Virginia Beach. That'll be a very interesting conversation. And I want to take a quick moment to give a big appreciative shout out to our great team of Morgan Chase and Hannah Martin, who have worked really, and our interns, my goodness, who have worked really, really hard to get all these folks in the conversation, as many as were willing to accommodate the request. And so really appreciate that. I think it's a great, great voter service, and we're glad to provide it. Today, we are wrapping up our congressional candidate conversations with a trip to the 1st District. Now, the 1st was one that was a bit redrawn earlier this year. It stretches all the way from part of Newport News and Hampton Roads northwest through parts of Williamsburg, the Middle Peninsula, Northern Neck, and right on up into Fredericksburg and Prince William County in Northern Virginia, New Kent County, now part of the 1st. It's a broad geographic brush, I will acknowledge that. So you are going to want to go to sbe.virginia.gov and plug in your address to see exactly where you vote, because as we've been saying all along, you may indeed vote in a different location than you did last time around. And if you haven't voted since the last presidential election, you will want to note that you will need to bring a photo ID with you. So lots of changes this year. So I want to make sure that you know where you're voting and don't show up in the wrong place. It's sbe.virginia.gov. Today, we'll talk with two of the three candidates standing for election in the 1st Congressional District. The incumbent Congressman Rob Whitman was unable to join us, but we are happy to bring you conversations with the other two candidates in that race today. Gail Parker joins us now. She is a retired Air Force reservist and a government contractor. Gail Parker, good to talk with you again today. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, Kathy. It's nice to be with you again, and it's great to be able to talk with the folks in Williamsburg, in Norfolk, and the Tidewater area, Newport News.
You know, you've brought up an interesting point, which has to do with the shape of the 1st. You know, if we think about the shape of the 1st, it sort of starts down in here in Hampton Roads, or ends, depending on how you look at it, I suppose. And it's very much focused, a lot of the activity in the 1st is focused more in the Fredericksburg, Northern Virginia area. So how do you propose to stay in touch with the issues in the part of your district that's really quite a lot different than that Fredericksburg, Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C. suburb area?
Well, I travel to that area quite a bit. In fact, I hate to have to mention this, but the automobile that I leased came from the Tidewater area.
Oh.
So, Tysinger. So, yeah, so I try to stay in touch.
Gail Parker with us today. She is seeking election to the U.S. House of Representatives from Virginia's 1st District. When you have joined us before, because you have been a candidate for office a couple of times now, your big issue is built around rail, and that certainly is an issue in Northern Virginia. But I want to kind of unpack that for a few moments, if we may. What do you like about rail, and what would you What would you see as your work in Congress around promoting rail for your district?
Well, Kathy, thank you for that question. Rail built anywhere in America benefits all of America. And I'm running this time because we need an independent in the Congress that will work for the people of Virginia and for the nation. The two legacy parties have kept in place legislation that subsidizes big oil, big asphalt, and big auto. That places the burden on the local communities to build rail that is healthier and it's safer for the families, and it benefits the environment, and it will keep the economy going. For every dollar invested in rail, $25 are returned to the community. Rail will increase revenues, and it will grow our economy. So there are so very, very many reasons why we need to build rail, and also to convert to renewable energy sources. The oil and gas companies are not oil and gas companies, they're energy companies. There's a better way now, a more healthy way, and that way is renewable energies from the sun, the wind, and water. And we don't have to pay for energy from the sun and the wind. It's a better way. It's a better mousetrap, as David Freeman said.
So when you think about, when you going back to the rail for just a moment, you've said you want to move funding from the Federal Highway Administration to the Federal Transit Administration for rail. And you've also said you want to connect the Washington metro area with nationwide high-speed rail corridors. There have been a lot of conversations about that in Virginia, where high-speed rail would go, and concern among some folks in Hampton Roads about how Hampton Roads connects to the prospect of high-speed rail. I wonder if you could give us a sense of your thoughts on those issues.
Certainly. Well, there is a U.S. DOT plan for high-speed rail corridors, and it's available on my website at www.gailparker.us. Our vision, or my vision for rail and how the Tidewater area would fit into the high-speed rail plan, is we need a virtual tapestry of affordable light rail feeder systems in our towns and our cities that feeds into higher speed rail, that feeds into high-speed rail nationwide, trains as fast as planes. And higher speed rail is so much more affordable than asphalt and oil subsidies, and it's much safer. We can get 80 miles of new track from Alexandria all the way to Richmond for less than what it takes to widen Route 1 3 miles. And that's just a start. We need to make rail transit convenient and affordable for the Tidewater area and the Norfolk area as well. I believe that the high-speed rail corridor goes from the D.C. area through Richmond and onto North Carolina. So we need feeder systems that feed into the high-speed rail. High-speed rail is for long distances nationwide, trains as fast as planes. Rail built anywhere in America benefits all of America.
Gail Parker with us today. She's the independent candidate seeking election to the House of Representatives for Virginia's 1st Congressional District. She's a retired Air Force Reserve officer and a government contractor. You can join us at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 if you have questions for Gail Parker. I'm wondering about some of the issues that Congress will undoubtedly deal with, and certainly military issues is key to that, particularly in the 1st District and, in fact, in all the districts represented in Hampton Roads. I know you're a veteran yourself, and I wonder, as you think about the size of the military right now, are you satisfied with it? Do you think that that is the kind of force we need in the world, or how would you change that if not?
Well, certainly I believe in a strong military, but we don't want to fall victim to the same trap that we set for the Soviet Union by expanding too much and putting too much money into the military. We have been concentrating. The two legacy parties have been concentrating on closing bases on the U.S. soil. Yet we have 800 foreign bases that we must maintain, pay for, and staff. Now, the other countries combined only have 30 overseas bases. That's way too many bases. We need to close those bases, bring our children home, turn the bases over to our friends and allies, let them maintain it and contribute more money into their own defense. We can still have SOFAs with them, our agreements with those countries for mutual defense. But we need to bring it home and put that money to work here in the U.S. for our population. We need an adequate-sized military. We also need to install an auditable accounting system at the Pentagon so that we can count the money and bring those expenditures under control. And we also need to stop those no-bid, uncontested contract awards. We can save, on average, 20% just by competing the contracts. There are a lot of economies that we can make there and still have a strong military.
We're at 16 minutes past the hour talking with Gail Parker, who is a candidate for the 1st Congressional District, which, again, is a sort of an oddly shaped district. It goes from Fredericksburg all the way down to parts of the peninsula, including parts of the city of Newport News. I'm wondering about the sticking on national issues for a moment. I wonder about immigration reform. That has certainly been an issue that has been front and center in the presidential campaign. Using those candidates as mile markers, how would you characterize your own take on immigration?
Well, Kathy, that is an issue with 12 million illegal immigrants in the U.S., and they have been here for about 15 years now. And it's an issue that the two legacy parties have turned a blind eye on and have refused to deal with. But pulling out 12 million 15-year experienced illegals right now would damage our economy without a doubt. So I believe that Dr. Jill Stein has a great idea on how to handle that issue. She is for finding a humane path to citizenship. We need to make a legal way to citizenship for these folks that have been here in our country, providing service work for our industries and our population for 15 years now.
One of the other issues that has certainly been in the news this week especially has to do with the Affordable Care Act. New premium notices coming out now. And while people had been warned they would be higher, they are indeed being experienced thusly. I wonder, as you look at the ACA, are you somebody who is in favor of scrapping it, adjusting it? Do you like it the way it is? What's your general stance on health care for all Americans?
Well, Kathy, previously, our position on health care is that we would create new jobs, good-paying jobs that would provide health insurance by building rail. So it's not an issue where I have done a lot of research, but I am very interested in Dr. Jill Stein's proposed single-payer method. She proposes, along with Dr. Margaret Flowers, who's running for U.S. Senate in Maryland, she proposes a method that is believed to provide better service at a lower cost. And we certainly need to lower the cost and make it truly affordable. But I do believe that the concept of providing medical care for all of our citizens is a step in the right direction. And as with anything with a democratic republic, we try something and we find out what works and what does not work, and we try something better. So I am for making it better, and I would like to look into better the proposal that is provided by Dr. Jill Stein, who is the Green Party candidate for U.S. president. At this time, Kathy, I'd also like to say that I am sorely disappointed that the four national parties were not included in the televised debate. That is a very undemocratic practice. There are truly four national parties, according to the CIA World Factbook, and I believe that all four should have been included in the debate, as well as the independents on the ballot. Now, folks can see Dr. Jill Stein on my YouTube channel. It's Gail Farrell Parker. Just Google Gail Farrell Parker on YouTube, and you'll find several YouTube video clips of Dr. Jill Stein answering the same questions that she would have been asked had she participated in the televised debate. Now, I am simply outraged and appalled that the four national parties were not included in those televised debates.
And I'm guessing, I think we can take it as an article of faith then, that because I always try to ask this question when I can remember it, that you are supporting Dr. Jill Stein in the presidential race.
We have been supporting Dr. Jill Stein in the presidential race, both on my YouTube channel and on the television show that I produce in Fairfax County, which is called Green TV. I have not voted yet, so I don't know how I'm going to vote yet. I'm still debating that.
You are still debating how you're going to vote?
That's correct.
Wow. 21 minutes past the hour. Nick's on the line from Yorktown. Hi, Nick. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. Great show.
Thank you.
A lot of interesting comments. I'm in favor of a lot of your money-saving ideas, the high-speed rail, et cetera. There's a ton, you know, 800 bases worldwide. There's tons of ways we could save money. If you do the rough math, the interest on the national debt is roughly $500 billion a year. The interest on the national debt. We flush away $500 billion a year on interest.
Okay.
And I want to know what ideas do you have to look at that big of a picture when it comes to the whole country and our expenditures and whatnot.
Nick, thanks for the call. It's a great question.
Yes, it is a great question, and we have been screaming about the national debt since it was $4.5 trillion, and it's almost $20 trillion now. If the two legacy parties, again, have been putting in place policies which increase the debt and being fiscally irresponsible in our view, we can reduce the debt by closing those bases, bringing them home, saving money at the Pentagon, the national debt, just the interest on it, as you so rightly point out, is now, it depends upon how you calculate the payment, whether it's the third largest payment in the budget or the sixth largest payment in the budget. But that's money down the drain as paying interest. We need to grow the economy and grow revenues to pay off that debt. That's our plan. Grow the economy with rail, high-speed rail, create jobs, new jobs in renewable industry and rail industries, and all of the transit-oriented development that would be required to serve massive amounts of rail and renewable energy. And that will grow our economy. It will provide good-paying jobs, which, of course, pay into revenues. And that's our plan.
Nick, thank you for the call. Nick, thank you for the call. Let's go to Matt on the on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you today?
Hi.
I just want to make a quick comment on comprehensive immigration reform. When the candidate says that both the legacy parties, have ignored comprehensive immigration reform. In 2013, the democratically controlled Senate passed immigration reform, 68-32. And then it was shelved in the House of Representatives by Republicans for the last 3+ years. So one party is addressing it, and the other party is obstructing it. And similar to the debt, the deficit budget has gone down under President Obama. He's cut the deficit by 2/3. And the reason the debt is so high is because the Bush administration, that interest continues to grow on all of the wars,
Matt,
that were created, as well as the Bush tax cuts.
Matt,
so
I appreciate the call.
Yeah.
Did you have a question specifically for Gail Parker?
Yes, I was. The question I had is, are you an independent or are you representing the Green Party? Because it sounds like you're basically just talking about Dr. Jill Stein. And that's
okay. Good question, Matt. Thank you for the call.
I am on the ballot this year as an independent. I have been supporting Dr. Jill Stein because I am more closely aligned with her environmental issues. I would like to point out that we believe that the the two legacy parties are really just one party, that one hand washes the other, and it's kind of collusion that they introduce seemingly proposed solutions, and then it gets tabled or shelved in some way. We believe that we need new blood in the Congress, and that can be brought in by independents and third-party candidates, particularly the Green Party, which is offering a number of positive solutions for our country. Solutions that are healthy for our population and will grow the economy and provide a humane way of dealing with people. And we need that.
Matt, thank you for the call. Speaking of humane ways to deal with people, we have a generation of young people, maybe moving into two generations, who have what they are describing as crushing student debt. There have been a lot of conversations about that and a lot of fears that that may represent the next bubble in the economy. I wonder how concerned you are about student debt and what you would propose for making college more accessible.
That's a good question, Kathy. I am concerned about student debt, and I have had some personal experience with it with a major university. When I enrolled in an online course, I had to sign up for the entire course at a cost of $35,000 and then was unable to get the books. And had I not had the foresight to ink in to my a way out of the contract, I would have had to pay $35,000 for courses that I did not take when I didn't even receive the book. As it was, I still had to pay $3,500 for a course that I did not take and could not have taken because I didn't receive the book. So this is predatory lending on the part of our state-sponsored university. Dr. Jill Stein.
Well, again, I'm curious about, Ms. Parker, is what would you do about that issue?
Well, my proposal is that we take the money that's for student loans now in the federal budget, which is a very healthy amount, and place that money to make free public education, distribute it between the states, and have free public higher education. Dr. Jill Stein is for just bailing out the student debt, just paying it off the way we bailed out Wall Street. And that might work. It's certainly worth considering. But there, we need some long-term solution rather than just bailing out the students on a one-time basis.
Gail Parker, our guest today, she's seeking election to the U.S. House of Representatives in the 1st Congressional District. Ms. Parker, I always like to give the candidate the last minute to say whatever you would like to say that perhaps we didn't touch on or that you want to be sure that the voters know. So the minute is yours. Take it away.
Well, I would like for you to know that the incumbent has not done anything to remove the burden from the local communities for building the mass transit. And mass transit is the way of the future. It's the way to move people more people more quickly than any other method of transportation. We need a way to evacuate the National Capital Area. Rail is so much more affordable. We can get 80 miles of new track all the way from Alexandria to Richmond for less than it takes to widen Route 1 3 miles. And that is being fiscally responsible when we build rail. And the prices must tell the environmental truth. Rail built anywhere in America benefits all of America. We need to start sending people to Congress that will start working for the people and not placing burden on them for being able to continue our way of life and paying off the national debt.
Gail Parker, thank you so much for being with us today. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Kathy.
You're welcome. Gail Parker is seeking election to the House of Representatives for Virginia's 1st Congressional District. She's a retired Air Force reservist and a government contractor. You can learn more about her at gailparker.us. That's gailparker.us. And we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back. We're coming up on 29 minutes before the hour. We are talking today with some of the candidates in the first district. The first district starts in Hampton Roads in parts of Newport News, moves northwest to parts of Williamsburg, up through the Middle Peninsula, Northern Neck, all the way up to Fredericksburg and Prince William County in Northern Virginia. But again, underscoring a lot of folks in our listening area will be voting in different locations this time than they did 4 years ago. So if voting is a four-year affair for you, then you will definitely want to check out the State Board of Elections website at sbe.virginia.gov. Very easy to do. All you have to do is plug in your address, and the election website will spit back to you the precinct where you'll vote, the location of that precinct, along with what the ballot will look like that you will see on election day. So you have a couple of days left to research any of the resources that we've been sharing with you where you can learn more about the candidates. Certainly there are these congressional candidate conversations when it comes to the House of Representatives, and most of the newspapers that serve our area have also done very excellent backgrounders on these candidates as well. The incumbent congressman in the 1st District, Rob Whitman, was unable to join us, but we just finished speaking with Gail Parker, and now we're glad to welcome Matt Rowe to the conversation. He works in Stafford County as a geographic information systems analyst and serves on the town council in Bowling Green, which is in the heart of Caroline County. Matt Rowe, thank you for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me, Kathy.
Oh, you're welcome. Is this your first run for public office?
No, actually, I'm on the town council in Bowling Green.
I meant larger than Bowling Green, and I appreciate your service there, because I tell you, it gives you a great window, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, they always say that the road to Washington goes through Bowling Green, so I'm just on that same road as so many other people. But no, I would say yes for anything at this level. This is the first time I've tried anything this big, certainly. But I do proudly serve on the town council in Bowling Green. I've been doing that for a couple years now, and it's been wonderful. I really love my town. I moved here about 12 years ago. It was a halfway point between my job down in Richmond, and my wife works up at the Dahlgren Navy Base in King George County. And so we settled here as our compromise.
Fair enough. And marriage is full of nothing but compromise. That's a fact. We're 28 minutes before the hour. As you think about your own situation and what you look at in the district, what are the issues that you are most concerned about? Is there one that really rises above all the others?
Well, usually I think about what questions I get asked the most. And a lot of people think that as a congressional candidate, I'll get big, weighty national issues like taxes or the economy or Social Security, anything like that. I hardly ever get those questions. Usually it's day-to-day life issues, like how long am I going to have to wait in traffic to get to work, or, you know, what am I going to do about childcare? And, you know, is the education that's being provided to my child at public school going to be good enough to make sure that he or she succeeds in life? These are more of the questions that I get, and it's usually about day-to-day life.
Hmm. So as you think about those issues, how, because I can see how those would be issues that you could affect there on the town council in Bowling Green, what is it about Congress that attracts you in terms of addressing those kinds of Main Street issues?
I think usually about many of the people that I've come in contact with over the course of, you know, not just the campaign, but my entire life and all the issues that they have to deal with. And so one of the big issues that I'm running on is paid family and maternity leave. And I'm a father of three kids. I've got two daughters and a son, 9, 6, and 3. And my wife, she's got a good job, but every time that we decide to have a child, she'd have to start banking up her annual leave and her sick leave just so that she would have enough time off of her job for that 3 months when our new baby came into the world. And you know, it's hard to say to people that, you know, we're not going to provide a benefit to you so that you can stay home with your child and give your child the time that he or she needs. I mean, the American Pediatric Association says that time alone with the child when the child first comes into the world is very important, and just simply handing your child over to childcare while you go back to work, I mean, it's not the right thing for the baby. And it's not the right thing for the mom, too. I mean, you think about sleepless nights. You think about all the other stresses of life that come along with that. And that's just one small issue there. And I think there's many other issues.
Are you proposing paid maternity leave and paternity leave, or just maternity leave?
Parental leave. Usually when I talk about it, I say maternity leave because that's what everyone thinks about. But I'll tell you what, when we had our first child, our 9-year-old, I was working a job I didn't really like all that well, and I ended up deciding to go back to grad school. And at that time, we were trying to figure out what we're going to do. The 3 months was up, and we looked at different childcare options, and then we decided that I would actually stay home with the baby while I went to grad school. And I'll tell you what, yeah, you know what, and this is what really sealed the deal for me on paternity leave, too, because dads need help, too. Because I remember the first day that my wife went back to work, it was my first day home alone with the kid, and just let's just say that there was an incident that involved an exploding diaper or something like that, and I did everything that I could to try to rectify that situation, and it was a complete disaster, and I had to call her at work to see what kind of help I could get over the phone. But, you know, new dads need help, too, and that time alone home with the kid is very important.
So the one question that comes to mind about that, because this is certainly a conversation that comes up from time to time, is sort of the role of government. How would you pay for that? Because what size companies are we talking about? Because we have FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act now for companies of a certain size, I think 50 plus, if I'm not mistaken. So who would you propose to have? Do we get it across the board? And if so, how do you pay for that?
Well, 5 states right now have similar leave policies that they've enacted. It's California, New York, Rhode Island, New Jersey, and I'm having an oops moment. I can't remember the last one.
No worries.
You know what? There was 5 states that have done this, and they've run it through their disability insurance program. And so it's like, you know, it's you know, what you would use for like workers' comp and things like that. But you can do that through either payroll tax, you can do it through corporate taxes. There really is no one funding mechanism that you have to go through. I don't think that it should be on the backs of the businesses themselves, because, I mean, whether you're a large corporation or a mom-and-pop shop on the corner, you know, you have to be careful about saying, like, okay, listen, you talk to that mom-and-pop shop on the corner, you say, okay, this employee of yours, she's a new mom, she needs to stay home with the baby now for 3 months, and you have to pay for it. That's going to be a big burden on a business like that, and I don't support putting that on the backs of small businesses. There are many different funding mechanisms that you could do this, and different states have different ways of doing it.
Matt Rowe, our guest in this half hour, he is seeking election to Virginia's 1st congressional district in the U.S. House of Representatives. I wonder, as you think about your own candidacy and the issues that you would face in Congress, you are representing a district, you would be representing a district, I should say, that is intriguing in the respect that you have a great population center up in the Fredericksburg area that's very much sort of a D.C. suburb. And then you have a population down here in Hampton Roads, and they're different in a lot of ways. So I wonder, as a representative, how would you go about making sure that you were in touch with the Hampton Roads part of the district when the Washington-focused district would seem to garner so much attention?
Well, I would say that, based on what I'm running on, I'm talking about those day-to-day life issues. They are across the board throughout the district. Let's talk about transportation and infrastructure. You go up to Prince William County, you're talking about sitting in traffic for hours and hours on end throughout the week, trying to get to and from work up in Northern Virginia or D.C. You can still talk about transportation in rural parts of the district, too. Like, when I'm out on the Northern Neck, the thing that I hear about most is 2 bridges that connect the Northern Neck to the rest of the world. There's the Potomac River Bridge that goes from King George into Maryland, and then there's the Grays Point Bridge that goes from Lancaster County across into Middlesex. I hear about those bridges all the time, and so, of course, I've done my research. I mean, the Potomac River Bridge, for instance, was built in 1940. It's a 2-lane bridge. It's a bottleneck, and they've been talking about replacing and upgrading that for about 45 years now. I'm only 35 years old, so the idea of fixing that bridge is older than me. So these are the issues that I'm hearing about in the Northern Neck. Transportation is an issue across the district, whether you're in Williamsburg or Fredericksburg.
We're talking with Matt Rowe, who wants to be the congressman from the 1st Congressional District. You can join us with your questions at 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Matt Rowe works in Stafford County as a geographic information systems analyst, and he serves on the town council in Bowling Green. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. 2240. I notice in among the issues that you care very deeply about has to do with, one of the issues that you care very deeply about has to do with gun violence. And that certainly is a very, very politically potent issue on Capitol Hill. Give us a sense of where you are on strategies that would curb gun violence and how that relates to the Second Amendment rights.
I'm for proposing common sense gun legislation, gun safety legislation. And when you're talking about this, you're talking about universal background checks. That's usually the number one that people talk about the most. This is something that's supported by 80%, 90% of Americans, whatever poll that you look at. This is to ensure that there is not that gun show loophole so that someone can avoid the background check by just doing a quick private purchase at the gun show. Or, you know, you want to make sure that you have that review of private sales as well so that, you know, someone can go through their background check and buy a gun and then just hand it over to the guy next to them. You want to prevent things like that. I do want universal background checks, and that is not abridging the Second Amendment in any sense. The other one that I'm pushing for is no fly, no buy. So if you're on the terror no fly list, there should be a waiting period before you buy a weapon. This was actually a plan that was put forward in the Senate a couple years ago, and it was by Dianne Feinstein out in California. And what it said was it would impose a 72-hour waiting period that if you're on the terror no-fly list and you want to purchase a weapon, well, you get flagged, and then there's a review to say to see, okay, should this person, A, be on the terror no-fly list, and B, can this person purchase the weapon? This would be reviewed by the judicial system. And I think that's an absolutely common sense way of helping to ensure that terrorists don't get weapons like that. My opponent, Rob Whitman, he says that there's no assault on the Second Amendment. And I'll simply say that I don't think the framers of the Constitution could have imagined a time where someone can come into our country, purchase a weapon with a high-capacity magazine, and kill Americans. And I just don't think that's a practical solution to a very, very serious problem that we have.
17 minutes before the hour, Pam's on the line from Yorktown. Hi, Pam. You're on the air.
Hello. I wish that, in a sense, Congressman Whitman had been on so I could ask him this directly. However, Mr. Rowe, the gridlock that is going on in Washington, D.C., is an abomination. We can't get a Supreme Court justice. There's a lot of things we can't get done. And they spend all their time trying to kill Obamacare rather than finding a new solution to it. However, if you got elected and if Mr. Trump was our president, what do you think you could do to try and relieve some of this gridlock? Unfortunately, we have too many people who vote for the incumbent at all times, regardless of whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. But we need somebody to go in there and undo this gridlock. What would you do?
Well, I think that regardless of who's in charge, whether it be a President Trump or a President Clinton or a Democratic or Republican Congress, you're still, no matter what, going to have that same gridlock. And that's just a sad fact. I think the biggest thing that we can do is campaign finance reform, serious campaign finance reform. We tried to do that with McCain-Feingold. It was sort of a patchwork solution that addressed some of the issues, but not everything. And then a lot of that was actually invalidated by the Citizens United decision back in 2010 with the Supreme Court. What I would say is there's really two tracks that you can do to try to solve this problem of money in politics. And there's the judicial route where, you know, you send up another case through the courts and see if that the Supreme Court decides differently. That's sort of out of the control of Congress there. Or because the Supreme Court said, okay, they made their Citizens United decision, you need to actually have a constitutional solution to this problem, whether it may be a constitutional amendment that gives you serious campaign finance reform. The problem in Washington is that votes are bought, plain and simple. I mean, if you're a large corporation or a special interest group that gives your guy up in Congress $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to vote a certain way, that's a big problem. And one of the big issues that I've noticed in this race especially is that when you have a sitting congressman that is trying to get maybe a certain ranking, let's take the NRA. We were just talking about gun violence. When you're trying to ensure that you get that A rating from the NRA so that you can keep getting that base support and you make votes that are frankly, not common sense votes in my judgment, you know, against, you know, universal background checks or things like that. That's part of the problem. If you're so concerned with trying to keep those certain ratings so you can keep getting those particular donations, that's a problem. I think we need campaign finance reform. And at the General Assembly level, we also need redistricting reform, because representatives should not choose their constituents. And when you have these nice, safe districts like this, you end up with mediocre politicians that are not accountable for their actions.
Pam, does that do it for you?
Yes, I'm very impressed with what he had to say. You've got my vote.
Thank you. I appreciate
it, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. All right. Pam on the line from Yorktown. We're at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. This is your opportunity to ask questions of Matt Rowe, who is seeking election to the U.S. House of Representatives for Virginia's 1st Congressional District. One of the other questions that undoubtedly Congress will be dealing with is the size and composition of the U.S. military. It's certainly a very important issue for this region and indeed for Northern Virginia as well. Generally speaking, do you think our military is right-sized? And what would you, if not, how would you propose changing it?
Well, we need to make sure that our military is ready for the challenges that face us in the future. I mean, we can't have this Cold War mentality of, you know, trying to stockpile weapons and troops in particular strategic locations. It's not really practical for the future of warfare, frankly. We need to be a little bit more rapid response. If you talked about bringing back people from overseas military bases, that's something that you can talk about. But in terms of the size of our military in general, I think that the size of our military is fine right now. I'm not proposing an increase or a decrease in the size of our military, especially with the Navy. There has been a lot of hubbub lately about the size of our Navy. And one of the facts I've heard is that in terms of the number of ships, our Navy is now at a state of where it was around World War I times. The fact of the matter is, back in those times, you had battleships and destroyers and frigates, and you had close combat vessels, and you didn't have aircraft carriers or ballistic missile submarines or the major components of a modern Navy. So we don't need as many ships as we needed in, say, wars of many, many decades ago. I know that's been something that a lot of people on the other in the other party have been saying, but frankly, we have a really, really strong Navy, and I think they're doing a great job, and I want to make sure that every branch of our armed services has the tools that they need to succeed.
18 minutes before the hour, and we're talking with Matt Rowe, who wants to be the congressman from the 1st Congressional District. You can join us at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. One of the other issues that certainly Congress will be dealing with, and it has certainly featured in the presidential campaign, has to do with immigration reform. Part of your district is in the Northern Virginia area that has seen quite a lot of growth in immigrants, and I wonder what your take is on those. Where do you find yourself on the issue of immigration reform?
I definitely support comprehensive immigration reform. I mean, actually taking a serious look at this issue has been something that's been going around since, I think, about 2005. It's something that President Bush brought up, and there just wasn't the political will at the time, and there still isn't the political will to tackle this big issue. When you're talking about what to do about the 11 million or 12 million or so undocumented immigrants that you have in this country, again, it comes back down to practical solutions. You're not going to deport all these people, because that will wreck the economies of many of our communities throughout the country. You're not going to rip apart families by, you know, sending moms and dads who are undocumented home while their American citizen children are left here in this country, or to send those American citizen children to a country that they have never been a part of. For me, it's about trying to find a reasonable pathway to citizenship so that you can bring everybody out from the shadows and get them better integrated with our communities. I think that's the only way that we can really seriously address this problem. Yes, border security is a part of this, but you know, one of the things that we talk about with border security that actually we don't talk about enough is the immigration court system. That is actually completely overloaded and undermanned. And the reason why you have so many people in this sort of like immigration purgatory is because they simply can't get their day in court to express their case. That's something that we really, really need to focus on fixing, is that immigration court system as well. But yeah, for me, comprehensive immigration reform with a pathway to citizenship.
We're at 10 minutes before the hour. The other question we've been asking many of the candidates has to do with what one and not possibly two generations of people describe as crushing student debt, crushing loan debt on the part of college students who've financed their educations, and tuition costs having gone up so significantly in the last 20, 30 years. So I wonder, what is your sense of congressional possibility on relieving that debt? Is that a congressional obligation? And if so, how would you do it?
Well, you actually have two questions kind of embedded in that. First, you need to talk about what to do about people that have graduated and currently have that debt, and then what to do about current students or people that have not yet gone to college. Now, let's talk about college graduates first. First, I want to fully admit, I am still paying my own student loans right now. And, you know, it's definitely a difficulty when you're trying to pay your student loans on top of paying my mortgage. You know, I've got my kids. With kids, there's all sorts of expenses that come with that, and many of the other bills that we have. So, you know, one thing that I think that we need to do, especially with people that have already graduated, is to allow them to refinance their student loans if that's a possibility, to lock in lower rates so that they can make payments that are less than what they pay now. If you can do this with your mortgage, you should be able to do this with a student loan. Now, let's talk about kids that have not yet graduated or haven't gone to college yet. For me, it's about making college debt-free. Not necessarily free, just debt-free. And let me talk a little bit more about that. So I think that every student should have the option to graduate from a public college or university in their state without taking on student debt. So if you can put programs into place that provide them with the money up front and give them an option of a very reasonable repayment system once they're out of college, there have been different states and different countries that have come up with really innovative ideas where, you know, if you graduate college with, say, an MBA versus getting a degree in social work, you're going to be making likely different amounts of money given those degrees. So you could say, okay, well, listen, pay us back a certain percentage of your paycheck in the future until you're able to pay off your debt. Instead of, you know, taking someone that has gone to school for social work, who certainly didn't go into it for the money, give them and just give them all this debt that they have to pay back while they're trying to actually do their job. It's a tough situation that a lot of graduates find themselves in, and I think we need to address that better.
Matt Rowe, I always like to give the candidates the last minute to say whatever else is on their mind that we didn't get to, or whatever else they want the voters to know. So the minute is yours, beginning now.
Well, first, again, thank you so much for having me. But so let me just talk about a little bit about me here. I get this question a lot. Why did I jump into the race this year? And the quick answer is, I want to do the greatest amount of good for the greatest amount of people possible. But there's more to it than that. I lost my dad to cancer. It was a year ago last week. And that served to remind me of a couple things. One, that you don't have all the time in the world to step up and to do the right thing. Like, for me, either the kids are too small, or I'm too busy at work, or that there's many of the stresses of life that hold you back from trying to help people out. For me, that's one of the reasons why I jumped into the race this year. And also, it served as a reminder for all the different things that families go through. I think about my mom and all the time that she had to take off of work to take care of my dad through rounds of chemo, radiation, trips to specialists. Anybody that's ever gone through cancer knows that, you know, it's definitely a family ordeal. And that's why one of the things I'm fighting for, paid family and maternity leave, the family leave side of that, that's why that's really important to me. Because I think of everything that she's gone through, and I want to help out families that are in similar situations.
Matt Rowe, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Matt Rowe is standing as the Democratic candidate for election in the 1st Congressional District. Thanks so much for joining us.
thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. The website is mattrowe.org, mattrowe.org. And so that's where you can learn more about Matt Rowe. So all of the House of Representatives on the ballot on November 8th, which is Tuesday. Can you even believe it? It is pretty incredible that we are closing in on Election Day. Tomorrow in this space, we're going to hear from the candidates, most of them anyway, standing for mayoral election in Portsmouth, in Suffolk, and in Virginia Beach. And if you don't live in those cities, you may be thinking, well, I don't have to listen to that. Well, it's always good to know who's leading the cities that neighbor us in Hampton Roads. That's just, it's the kind of contiguous region we live in. So it's really important to know who's prospectively going to be representing you. So we'll have those conversations tomorrow. Certainly each city has very, very different and interesting issues that have become a part of the mayor's race. And so we'll talk about that tomorrow in this space. Up next here on 89.5, it's Radiolab. Then coming up tonight on WHRO TV 15 at 8 o'clock, it's Nature, the story of cats, Asia to Africa. And then at 9, it's NOVA, Treasures of the Earth. They're going to be looking at gemstones and how gemstones like rubies and diamonds are forged. So that'll be interesting. That's coming up tonight at 9 on WHRO TV 15. Thanks so much for being with us today. We will see you right back here tomorrow. Up early next week, of course, on Monday will be the day before the election. We have a very interesting show lined up for you then. We'll be taking a look at the constitutional amendments that are on the ballot because you will have those as well when you are greeted by poll workers when you arrive at the polling places. Again, a reminder, you will need a photo ID to vote. That's a new change that was implemented between last presidential election and this one. So if you voted in between, you've probably had that experience of having to bring your photo ID. But if you have not, then that is definitely something that you will want to have with you. It can be a driver's license. It can be a passport. It can be a state ID if you work for a particular state agency. You could have a government-issued military ID card, a veteran's ID card, a valid college or university student ID card with a picture on it. Those are the kinds of things that they're looking for in terms of identity at the polling place. And if you are one of the 11 tribes recognized by the Commonwealth of Virginia, you can bring your tribal enrollment or your other kind of tribal ID with you when you come to the polls. Great website for you is the State Board of Elections website, sbe.virginia.gov, or you can go to elections.virginia.gov as well. That is a place where you can find out all of the different requirements for photo IDs that you will have. You can also take a look there to plug in your address and find out where you vote. We can't say this enough. Many of you voted in the last election, maybe voting in different places this time around. I don't want you to get there and have that concern and disappointment about having to go elsewhere to cast your vote. So check that out ahead of time, and I think you will be much better off. Thanks for listening today, and we'll see you right back here tomorrow.